Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. This is Renee. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. I hope everybody had a wonderful, wonderful weekend. The Brewer family had a great weekend. We celebrated my granddaughter Crystal's 17th birthday this weekend. We went to a park in Deerfield that we've been going to for years, Quiet Waters Park. And we had a great time. The kids played ball, played in the, they have a nice place for the littler kids, the great-grandchildren, and my grandson, AJ. Everybody else is a bit older than all of them, but they all had a great time. They even went in the lake for a swim. So it was a lot of fun. It was a beautiful day here in Florida, too. It wasn't real hot. We were under a big ficus tree, and it was perfect. It was a beautiful breeze. Hard to keep tablecloths on the tables, but other than that, it was awesome. I hope you and yours had a wonderful weekend as well. I'm going to bring Shelley in because right away this morning we're going to talk about everything we talked about last week. If you were with us last week, you know that Friday, instead of doing the normal recap day of the week that we're in, something came to me in regard to adoption agencies, and we aired that. And the feedback I got was really, really interesting. Some sad, some important to know, and I think it opened some eyes to the fact that it's another one of those arenas where we need a little guidance and some help. So I brought Shelley in. Good morning, Shell.
Good morning, Rainey.
How you doing, honey?
I'm doing good. We had a good weekend, too. Hectic, but good. Got a lot accomplished.
That's good. That's good. Part of accomplishing things is a rewarding thing, especially when you're having fun as well. That's always nice.
Yep.
So we did a lot this weekend, too. As most of you know, we're moving, and we have to leave the house because the closing will be Wednesday. And rule of thumb is that you must vacate prior to the closing when you're closing with a bank or a money institution. So that's what we're doing. And it should be intricately designed by yours truly, so there's no telling what's really going to happen. But we'll accomplish it, I hope. And it's been an interesting adventure trying to pull all this together. I mean, because for those of you who have never been to my home, it's 4,000 square feet, five bedrooms and four bathrooms, a lot of house to empty. But some of the families are branching out on their own. So a lot of the stuff is going to other homes instead of just going with me and Grandpa. So I think we've pulled it off, and I think we should be fine. But I wanted to start out, I think we'll go from Monday, Shell, although I'm itching to talk about everything that we talked about Friday because I had a lot of feedback Friday during the day and even continuing over into the weekend. So, but Monday, we talked about the fact that you and I, the Friday before, had gone to the Palm Beach Mental Health meeting that was held in here in West Palm Beach, and we both found it to be interesting, for sure, and having some issues that they'd like the public to be involved in to help get some decisions made that will help. The biggest point that I think they made out that they need the help with is the fact that a lot of our mentally challenged people are in the street. And because they're in the street and because the advantages offered by our government don't seem to be as flexible as they need to be, So consequently, some of these, in particular young people, get caught up in the revolving door between the being incarcerated and being back in the street. And it's opened up a big cycle. Although I do believe that the jails and the prisons are very well aware of that now and are working to do what they can do. But is that really what we want to have happen? Do we really want to know that somebody who is mentally troubled or incapacitated in one way or another to have to go through the system of sleeping on a cot or the floor until they get somebody's attention? I don't think that's what we intended. So the mental health, Palm Beach Mental Health, is really organized and fighting to get some recognition in this arena, let people know that this is one of the biggest problems at this point in time. And we even discussed the fact that there are some organizations out there that want to donate money to it, but they want it to be organized and they want it to mean something before they hand over the money. Right. What else did you get out of our meeting with them, Shel? Let's just kind of summarize and recap.
That shocked me because I had never heard this statistic before, is that Florida is 49th in the country, ranked 49th in the country.
Yep.
For mental health services. And I find that shocking since, like you said, so much mental health is connected with substance abuse, and sometimes the substance abuse causes the mental illness, and sometimes the mental illness causes a person to seek out self-medicating. So it's kind of a vicious cycle. Sometimes by the time you're in front of this person, you don't know which started which, and it can go both directions. And the fact that Florida is one of the largest areas for drug distribution, a lot of drugs come into this state and then into the rest of the country, it is surprising that, you know, knowing that, and the authorities obviously have known this for a long time, that there hasn't been more done to deal with the consequences of drug trafficking and things like that, and part of that is the effect on mental health. And that we rank so low in the country. I mean, I would have been shocked if we were in the middle, but we're, like, just about at the bottom with regard to having viable mental health services. So that was the biggest shocker for me, I would have to say.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think we were both, kind of surprised at the fact that there's a lot of money being spent, but it's being spent badly, and it's going to places that aren't making a difference. I mentioned the first meeting that I ever went to when I brought up CARP, which is, I don't want to just hone in on them, but it is the one that I know the most about. And one of the young women in the crowd stood up and she said, "But, you know, CARP saved my life." And I said, "But look at us. We're, you know," I said this to her privately, not in the group. I said, "Look at how many people are here today. There was almost 100 people there at that first meeting, and only one person stood up and said that." So the ratio was not good. And I'm pleased, and I was very pleased that she was helped, because she was a beautiful young woman, and she took it a step further by becoming a part of the remedy instead of the problem. She works in a place that helps people with these issues. So I thought it was, you know, but I also thought to myself, this is a young woman who, given the right opportunities, could have helped herself. You know, so
I was just thinking the same thing, and a lot of times that's happened. It's not so much that cops help her; it's just that she was already ready to help herself, and she just needed that extra support, and CARP was there. So it's not so much a credit to CARP as to the fact that she was on the verge of getting herself better and just needed something to latch on to, and it just happened to be that program.
Exactly. And which is great. And you'd like to think that would happen a lot. And maybe it does. I don't know. I've never looked at any statistics, and I don't know that they put any bona fide statistics out there. And I suspect what I know about it is most of the time it's just a big revolving door. And revolving doors, I mean, that's why people use that saying, get you no place, get you no place. And it gets you in and out and in and out and no place else, not up, not down, just around and around and around. So we would like to see something different happen with that. And, of course, when we started talking about it, as I usually happens to me, I get feedback from people who don't want to really be in the middle of all of this, but will share little stories with me. And the stories are a lot. They're not a few. They're a lot. And I think that we need to pay attention to this. And as I said, at the meeting, there was a panel of local benefactors, organizations that raise money that have other benefactors, and they have monies available, but they only want to put the money where it's going to make a difference, and who blames them? So there is a lot of work to be done, and input, of course, is what makes better decisions. So I urge any of you out there that are in these kind of struggles or have a family member or a best friend or anybody that you have some ideas that are going to make a difference, that's what they're looking for. That's what they're still looking for. And they want to be able to make a difference. And there's good people working it. There's good people who are aware of it. So now's the time to get involved in that if you have the time, the energy, and some of you may even have some of the resources that are needed. So I do know that there's a lot of good people out there right now trying to come up with housing. And they run up against local neighborhoods not wanting any part of that in their neighborhood. This is something else that I think people should be aware of. Here's the truth, people. That this is a cold, hard fact. Just because somebody is absolutely positively stating to you that I'm going to open a house that will have young people, young adults, old people, whoever you're honing in on that have issues, and they're going to be living in your neighborhood, and neighborhoods actually band together and veto those kind of usages in their residential areas. Well, now here's the truth. You really don't know who's living next door to you now. You really don't. So if there's somebody that can take charge of a house like that and you can know that somebody's doing something to make things better, that's what you should be thinking about. I understand keeping your family safe. If you have young children, there would be some concerns. So go ask questions if you're concerned. But I've talked to at least three people in the last 6 months that have tried to set up different kinds of places and have zoning has stopped them because neighbors go to zoning meetings and say, absolutely not. I do not want one of those places in my neighborhood. I don't want to worry about a bunch of people who are this and that and the other thing running around my neighborhood. Well, you don't know who's running around your neighborhood now. Wake up. At least this place would offer some help. But that's a big issue, you know. That's really a big issue. Somebody wanted to buy this house and do that, and they were told that there's already one in the neighborhood, so they couldn't do another one. So that's too bad, you know, because these are people that are trying to make things better. So that was Monday's show, and then we talked Tuesday, Bullies to Buddies, and worked out of the workbook. Shell, are you with me? Shelly, yeah, I didn't think we were. So Bullies to Buddies, I got some feedback on that show because we talked at length about how the powers that be are working with the kids that are labeled bullies. And we talked about punishment and, you know, some kind of retribution for poor behavior. And somebody misunderstood what I said when I said we don't believe in punishing. And they called me, and she said, I have to rethink everything I do now with my kids because you said it's not good that, you know, Izzy doesn't think it's good to punish people. And I said, no, you took it out of context. What he's saying is that when you involve in a school scenario, is your phone okay, Shel? I lost you and got you back. Are you there now?
Yeah, I was trying to talk to you, and evidently you couldn't hear me. So there must have been wrong with our connection, so I hung up and called back in.
Okay. Yeah, I couldn't hear anything. I thought you were gone, and I said, Shelley, are you there? And then I dropped the call completely, but you're back now. Okay. So anyway, Tuesday with the Bullies to Buddies show, when we talked about it didn't work and it compounded the fracture when teachers and principals and everything reprimanded the kid that picked on the other kid, and then the parents got involved and it turned into a much bigger problem than it was if the child that was being picked on stood up for themselves and, you know, either said, you know, we talked about all the different ways that they could handle it, but that's what we should be teaching them instead of saying, run and tell somebody else so that this can turn into a big mishmash of he say, she say, and who's right and who's wrong, and which mom and which dad are bigger than the other mom and dad. We don't want that. We want to figure out a way to teach our kids how to deal with it themselves, because when they get out in the real world, that's what they'll have to do. You can't go tell your boss, you know, Shelly's picking on me. Shelly told me she didn't like my blouse today, so I'm going home. You know, I mean, is that the way you're going to handle yourself when you're a grown-up? You can't.
Meanwhile, there are grown-ups that do stuff like that. I've worked at companies where HR is haunted by particular staff members, and their complaints are just about that nonsensical. And they're the type of staff member that doesn't hold on to their job very long, that does end up getting let go because it's like they haunt management. And you can't run a business with somebody that's that fragile. So unless they're really, really talented, and a lot of times they're not, just because it plays into other insecurities, but unless they're really, really talented, it's not tolerated. You know, the first couple of times they'll try to deal with the person, and then after that it's like, wow, this person is just, it's too problematic, and so they end up getting the opposite reaction that they were looking for. Instead of having somebody fend for them, they end up being let go, which is
right.
And that pounds the problem, and then they become more of a victim in other scenarios. And I've seen this play out a couple of times at several different companies. But yeah, so there's interest. And the other thing is that punishing, you know, don't misunderstand. Punishing and consequences are two different things. You can have a consequence to bad actions, which isn't necessarily a punishment, but it's still a lesson. Like if you have somebody that bullied another child, you know, if you have a child that bullied another child, you can bring them in and say, look, it's not okay that you did that to him, you know, whatever. You know, don't turn it into a major big deal and say, look, I want you to now do a report on bullying. I want you to research it a little bit, and I want an essay on my desk by tomorrow because I want you to understand a little bit more about bullying. So why don't you now do a report on the perspective of somebody being bullied? I want to see if you can understand it. So that's a consequence without punishing him, without admonishing him, without telling him he's a terrible person, you know. So it doesn't mean there's no consequences. But you, if you're going to intercede, you have to intercede in a way that doesn't further victimize the bully and make them more of a bully, and then take the victim and victimize them even more. Because if you step in and protect them, you're basically telling them they can't protect themselves, which is one of Izzy's message. People have to be taught self-reliance. And part of the bullying to Buddy's message is to take the victims and make them not be victims so that this doesn't keep perpetuating throughout their life, because just protecting them against that one bully and punishing that one bully on their behalf and further confirming that they were, in fact, the victim is now setting them up to be a victim for the rest of their life from other people, random people they're going to meet. So it's not helping either side, and that's what Izzy was getting to. Not that there's not consequences, but that this whole thing with punishing and reinforcing the victim mentality is not working.
Well, and there's nothing wrong with somebody mediating or somebody being, you know, the providing some balance in a situation. There's nothing wrong with that. What's not good is when they are the deciding factor and you don't do it for yourself. So to have somebody, I mean, I've mediated a million times in situations, and being able to sit between two people who are just struggling to, you know, get past their differences and letting them talk it out with somebody just there to throw in a word every now and then, or say, you know, you're not listening, or, you know, do you not hear what they're saying? There's lots of different things that can be done to help them get through their issues. So say if you're in a school situation and you got two kids, and we talked a lot about peer counseling, and my kids gave major feedback about not wanting a kid in the next class up, especially like when you're talking about junior high school or middle school, and you've got the sixth graders who start having problems in that grade for some reason, and then a seventh or an eighth grader is allowed to come in to be the peer counselor. And they don't like that. The kids don't, every one of them said the same thing to me. Then they think that they're the boss of us, and they come in like they have all the answers, and they don't. So they would either have to go to the same age of just people that are uninvolved and can sit and listen to both sides of the story and let you talk it out, being able to work through things like that. It's possible with a 12-year-old to do that. They're not...
Right.
They're already maturing enough so that they get the difference between right and wrong. So I've always thought that was my grandchildren's idea, God, 4 years ago when we first started talking about this stuff. That's what they should happen way back then. And, of course,
right.
It does help them work it out without bringing in somebody who can really get you in trouble. There's the difference. Because if, you know, that's like parents who say to me, you know, my 17-year-old's out of control, I'm going to call the cops. And I always look at them and say, you really need to think that through. Really, really need to think that through. Because once you bring in the enforcer, an outside entity, you will no longer have any choice in the decisions that are going to be made. They will take over those decisions.
Right.
And then you
right.
won't be able to say, never mind, I didn't mean it. Don't do that. I don't want them to go there, or I don't want this to happen. So, sorry I called you. It doesn't work like that, you know.
Right, right. Well, the other thing is, I mean, it's good that you use the example of mediation, because that's exactly what should happen. You know,
mm-hmm.
you take both parties and you sit them down, you know, and again, we're talking about straight-out bullying. We're not talking about violence or criminal acts.
Right.
Even though a lot
right.
of that... cold bullying, that's not what we're talking about. That is when law enforcement does need to be brought in. If it's getting to the point where it's becoming violent and life-threatening, that's really not bullying, and it shouldn't be classified as that anymore. We're talking about real bullying, somebody just being mean, taunting, even as relentless as it can be, providing it has not gone into physical harm, because then it flips out of bullying and into crime, okay? But if you're just talking about somebody that's relentlessly mean to another individual, is just making their life miserable, taunting them, threatening them, things like that, you get them in a room and you sit them down and you say, look, you know, what is going on with you? So you have a mediator who's there for both sides, but not taking either side against the other, trying to get the kid who's being bullied not to feel so much like a victim, and trying to get the kid who's bullying to say, why are you angry? Why are you acting out on this kid? What has he ever done to you? Has he ever done anything to you that made you angry? Then why, you know, and let them talk it out and let them see each other talking it out. So, you know, instead of looking at the guy who's doing the bullying and saying you're a horrible person, you're going to get suspended for 3 days and blah, 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 but not attending to why he was bullying to begin with, just punishing him doesn't fix the problem. And that was the point Izzy was getting to. Not that there shouldn't be consequences for bad behavior, but just flat-out punishing without addressing why this kid was bullying to begin with, you've just created another victim over here, and it's not going to stop them from bullying in other situations.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and that's, you know, obviously we want a world where everybody takes care of their own garbage and where everybody handles their own cleanups and where everybody behaves the way they want other people to behave towards them. That's the
right.
whole idea. That's the whole idea. I don't like certain people saying things to me, so I don't say it to anybody else. I am very offended by some profanity. My whole family knows this. The F word to me is slang for making love. And why is it necessary to use it to express yourself in a 10-word sentence? You can hear the F word four times in some circles.
Well, actually, it's slang for having sex, and it really has nothing to do with making love and having sex. Are actually two different
things. Yeah, well, you knew what I meant. But
right.
the whole point is, it could mean that, Shelley, if people didn't abuse it the way they do, if people don't use it the way they say it. That's how you think of it, because that's the way everybody uses it, like it's bad, like it's profanity.
Right,
so,
right.
So
yeah,
I
have an issue with that word.
I don't talk
and
that way to other people because I don't like people talking that way to me. And I'm not above looking at somebody who's my age, older than me, which is hard to find these days, but putting my hand on their hand and saying, please don't use that word when you talk to me. It makes you sound like you don't have any other words to use.
Right.
Is your vocabulary that limited, right?
Right.
So it is, again, one of those kind of things that you just don't. I mean, I hear it slip from a lot of people all the time because it's the way they talk in the circle that they're in. And that's none of my business, and I know that. But I just say to people, you know, that's okay. You know, you and your husband or you and the guys you work with or, you know, when the one grandson gets home from working all day, it falls out of his mouth three or four times, and then all of a sudden all I have to do is give a look. Sorry, Graham, I forgot I was home. You know? So it is what it is. But the point here is that, you know, we all have to give space to other people for what's offensive to them. You can do whatever you want when you're with the people that are okay with that, but you have to be aware of the other people in the room. You know,
I'd fall over dead
when I was a kid if my father had said that word in front of my grandmother. I would have been like, oh, my God, my grandmother's going to shoot him. You know?
Right. Well, one of the things is that, like you said, when I was a kid, that was never acceptable. I couldn't use language like that.
No.
I did when I was around my friends, but I never did around adults and certainly not around younger children. It was really taboo. And I think that's what bothers me today is that a lot of people use it in like a Walmart with little kids around them. I don't understand why people aren't more careful with using vulgarity and things like that. It's like people don't care anymore. There was a time when it was socially unacceptable, and it's a lot of people aren't that careful.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe that's the deal. You know, you saying that just gave me a bit of a mini epiphany, and I thought to myself, you know, that is why they use it, because it just doesn't mean the same that it used to mean. And
but it should
law,
still, because it is still
yeah.
a profanity. It still is a vulgarity,
yeah.
and it's still not a mm-hmm. nice word to use. And why people have become so incensed by it is surprising to me. Because like I said, when I was a teenager, you know, 30 years ago, I used the word when I was around my friends. But when I was around teachers or other adults, I was very careful not to use that word. And nowadays, everybody uses it. It's just, you know, it's like mm-hmm. the. You know, it's popping
exactly.
out of people.
Exactly.
Right, you know, it's
exactly.
completely inappropriate.
No. So, at any rate, we kind of have summed up bullies to buddies on Tuesday and the fact that we felt that we needed to reiterate what we were trying to explain, and punishment is not what we're looking for when we've got a little thing going on between a couple kids in elementary school or in middle school. We want to teach our kids how to deal with somebody saying something that isn't nice to them and figure out what to do with it instead of, you know, yes, you should tell somebody if you see somebody else being picked on and the other person can't stand up for themselves, or especially if it's a hands-on picking on. Those are different things. If it's not a hands-on picking on, if it's just words, my suggestion to young people is to maybe keep an eye if you are that kind of a child and you want to keep an eye, but otherwise stay out of it and say to your friend later, you should have spoke back to him. They don't have the right to say that to you. Maybe just support them in that way, and maybe that would help. So Wednesday, we talked about the usage of psychotropic drugs with mental health and mental challenges. We talked about a lot of the things that are given to really, really young kids for behavioral problems, ADHD, and the girls, my friendly witch doctors, discussed some of the different things that we think are better. Diet, of course, was at the forefront. And I think that diet is, of course, one of the most important things that you can do for your own family, that is can be done for the whole family and have some good, you know, good results. So simple. So I have a couple great-grandchildren who have major sweet tooths. They would walk away from swimming, playing, anything for sugar. And at parties and things like that, I have to stop them. They would just devour like a whole cake. If I didn't intercede, they would devour a whole cake. And they're very hyper, and that's why. And their mom and their grandma, you know, fight with them about it all the time and tell them, you know, that they can't have that, won't even buy it for the house. So something happens in that regard that I would like to talk about at some point in time. It's like the minute you go on a diet, all you can think about is what you can eat. I know that firsthand. The minute you make the decision that you're going to give up different things, that's all that's on your mind. And even if that's not what's all on your mind about the things that that you really want to eat, like pancakes. I know so many people who love pancakes. Pancakes are a comfort food. They mean love and warmth. And the minute somebody goes on a diet, the first thing they think of, I'm going to be really good all this week, and Sunday I'm going to have pancakes, right? Shelley and I both can relate to that in one way or another. So I think part of the deal with young people is that instead of making it look like you're taking something away from them, maybe have it look like they're special, because you're going to include, like those kids that I talked about where the teacher came in and taught them, they donated the bullets and had the kids all make juices out of fruits and vegetables, and they loved
right.
them. It was
special.
That's
a great idea, introducing them to a healthier diet and making it fun. But the other
yep.
side of it, which Monica and I had talked about, is that today, more than even 5 years ago, because there's a lot more studies done now with diet and how it affects kids, there are alternative foods. There are gluten-free foods. There are sugar-free foods that have a very, very similar taste and texture to the foods that kids crave. But now you're having sweets that are sweetened with stevia or xylitol or something like that that doesn't spike the kid's blood sugar. You're having things sweetened with agave syrup instead of corn syrup,
uh-huh.
which is easier for the body to break down. So there's all these alternatives for parents. There's all types of cheese products. When I first became vegetarian, most cheese alternatives were made out of soy, and it had a very, very bitter taste to it. Now you're having cheeses made out of almond and coconut milk and rice milk and the Daiya cheese, which is, like, unbelievable, Daiya. You can buy it in blocks, slices. It melts. It's used at a couple of the vegetarian restaurants in Florida, Sublime and Darbster, both use the Daiya cheese in their products. Amy's, which is a brand that sells pizzas, uses the diet cheese on their pizzas, so it's vegan. And so there's vegan and vegetarian options, there's gluten-free options, there's sugar-free options. So there's all these options now that parents can still give kids what they crave. They can give them their pizzas. They can give them their snack foods. They can give them their little treats to take and a prepackaged thing in their lunch so that they look like all the other kids. But when you look at the ingredients, they're more wholesome, and they're free of a lot of the stuff that we talk about that messes with kids' ability to keep their head on straight. So you don't have to start packing carrots and cucumbers and sending that to school, your kids, although it's a good idea. You can still give them some of the comfort foods, but they're such healthier options, and it's just a matter of a parent taking a little bit of time, going into a Whole Foods and start reading packages and comparing it to what they're buying now. Look at the ingredients and look at the difference in the ingredients and really understanding what they're eating. And it really only takes maybe a couple of shoppings to get a comfort zone with that. It's not going to take months or years. It did for me because I didn't have any guidance. But now you can go into a Whole Foods and tell somebody, hey, look, I've got a kid that's a little hyperactive. Can you recommend some snack foods that will help them with that? And these people are trained to kind of like walk you around the store a little bit. So there's a lot more help for parents than there used to be.
Yeah, and I think again, it's all about the presentation with everything we do. It's all about the presentation and how you make yourself feel about something that you're going to do that's going to be a change. I used to say they should abolish, we were talking about four-letter words a few minutes ago. That's another four-letter word that should be abolished, and that's diet. Diet is supposed to, you know, it's supposed to mean, you know, just how you nourish yourself. And it for somebody like me who struggled with weight their whole life, it's a disgusting word. I hate it. I hear it
right.
And I think, oh, God, not again.
Right.
So it is what it is. So I think that was a real important fact that came out when we talked about the synthetic drugs and the natural things that we can do. And I think that diet was one of the most important things. Or food, let's say food and nourishment choices. Thursday, we talked about regret. And I don't want to spend a lot of time on this because I'll regret doing that because I want to spend a lot of time on what we talked about on Friday. So regret causes turmoil for you inside your gut, inside your head, inside your whole being. When you don't do something that you know you should, because something rings true, but there's this one little thing that stops you and you regret it later. You regret the fact that you didn't say certain words, or you regret the fact that you did say certain words. So regret is all about thinking about the future, thinking about how something is going to affect you tomorrow, not just this minute. We've had many shows about instant gratification, many, many shows. And instant gratification for all of us is a downhill spiral. Instant gratification pertains to eating those pancakes, even though you know that's going to make you sad tomorrow, or spending a whole bunch of money on something you really didn't need and then having buyer's remorse. That's another source of regret. You need to think about your future when you're making a decision today that will affect your future. That's how you avoid regret. And regret comes in all different sizes, shapes, and meanings. Could be words, could be actions, could be a million different things that will cause you regret. And regret, very sadly, can make you very ill.
Absolutely.
Make you very ill in many, many different ways. So think about, I don't mean, you know, like Barbara would say to me, oh, my God, you do that for everything you say? I get it. Some things are like, you know, you can't pick apart everything. But be aware of the fact that when you make a decision today, and it's an important decision, it will have repercussions tomorrow. So if you don't want to make it repercussions of regret, then think about it a little bit more carefully.
And the other thing is, too, is that if you recognize that you said or did something or didn't say or do something that you should have, and you realize that something, some negative outcome happened because of that. You hurt yourself financially or emotionally or physically, or you hurt another person. Maybe you affected somebody on their job or in a relationship, or you affected their relationship with you, all these different scenarios. But if you recognize that something you did or didn't do or said or didn't say had some sort of a negative outcome, instead of staying in that state of regret, which spirals on and on forever, by the way, this is something people don't understand. Regret will stay with you for your life. And even if you're not consciously aware of it, it'll go into the back of your mind and it will literally eat away at you. We have people that came to the Institute that had cancer that when they went through their psychotherapy, there was something that happened 30 years ago that affected them. They never released it, never got over it, never dealt with it. And here now it's roaring its head 30 years later and they've got this like terrible disease. All right, because that's what regret does to you. It will never go away. So the best thing to do, as difficult as it is for people, if you do recognize that your actions created some negative outcome, take responsibility. It's actually very freeing to take responsibility and apologize. Either apologize to yourself if the negative account, you know, say, all right, look, I did a really stupid thing. I suffered this consequence, but I'm going to pick myself up and go on and learn from it. Instead of wallowing in the regret, say, okay, well, now if I have to not handle things like that in the future, empower yourself to become a better person through this mistake you made. Or if it affected another individual, go and apologize to them. Even if they don't accept your apology, you know what? You've already put that energy out there, and it's healing, and it will eventually, whether it's days or weeks or months later, it will eventually improve things. But people have such a fear of taking responsibility and admitting they made a mistake, so they'll just hold on to that regret in the background, and it eats away at you.
Wow. I agree with all of that, and I do think it's, you know, like we've said so many times, all of these things, all the decisions that we make can have major repercussions in our lives in so many different ways. So regret, you know, every time I say that word, I think of that that silly cartoon that Diane Lehosky and I laughed about for so many years, the egret sitting on the fence, and they both look at each other and say, egret, I've known a few, and we both you know, broke into song about egrets. I've had a few, but then again, too few to mention.
Yeah.
Always makes me think of that. So now let's move on to Friday, because lots and lots of repercussions about Friday's show. Some good, some bad, some very, very caring, some very, very loving. But one of the things that I feel the need to talk about is the fact that integrity is lost in so many of our systems, so many of our systems. And I have heard from the young woman that gave me this story last week, and this has gotten horrible for her. And now the Indian Nation is involved. I think I mentioned that last week. But first, I want to start from the beginning. She's been messaging me this morning, filling me in on some of the things that are going on, and I wish I had some quick answers. I don't, but I also believe that there are some answers. But the first thing I want to say, and this is what I posted on Facebook this morning, and I want everybody to think about this. There was a lot of feedback regarding the gentle care adoption. Do you have a story about that system? If you do not need to tell your whole story, unless you want to, but you can if you would like to. I think that this is another arena that's in big trouble and has become a monetary opportunity instead of what could be beautiful in a time of need. most of us look at the option of having your baby, if you know you are in a horrible position, a position that will only get worse, not get better, you can't see light at the end of the tunnel, and you know your child, you love them already, you want them to have a good home, that's been the option for women for years, years and years and years and years. And adoption agencies were given the right, the opportunity to help the baby and make a family who was childless or unable to reproduce have a family. How beautiful can you get? The picture that's painted there is like everything we believe in, right? I mean, it sounds wonderful. And yet, right. It's become all about money. So integrity is gone. So I want to read something that it's very short. It is actually the meaning of integrity. Ensuring the people, systems, processes, and resources that deliver integrity are in place, in use, and will perform when required over the whole cycle of the asset. Now, the asset is that baby, as far as I'm concerned, in this scenario. So what's true? What is really, really true at the end of the day? Is it a true situation to take a child away from a mom who has bonded with it and held it in their own being for 9 months? Is that a good thing? No, there's nothing about that that's good. But if when the baby comes into this world and mom has no money, no family, is deemed to a life of hand-to-mouth and welfare and all the other things because they've got no education, nobody is looking out for them, maybe that's how their life started. So they make a decision that hopefully they won't regret and put that child up for adoption. In some scenarios, it's something that will fix itself. The dilemma that they're in the moment will get better. So then is it still right for an adoption agency to step in and not be trained well enough to understand or know themselves that this situation will get better? This woman's going to want her baby back? That stopped because there's lots of money being realized. So they no longer care about the fact that this is going to get better. All they're seeing, again, is the dollar signs. In some cases, a baby going from a mom who is in a predicament, going to an adoptive family, makes that adoption agency as much as $40,000.
That's right.
$40,000 for one baby.
Yep. Big business.
I mean that's like most babies weigh 6 pounds. So we're talking about several thousand dollars a pound for that baby. And that's how they're looking at it. This appalls me. It appalls me. I am so naive, I even shock myself. I thought adoption agencies were an end to a means. I thought that they were a good thing.
And many of them are. Many of them are. You know, we're not talking about all adoption agencies. We're talking about the ones that operate solely for the money. And just like everything else that's out there, you have some adoption agencies that have their staff with people that truly, truly care and are there to make a difference and to match babies with loving parents. And you have other adoption agencies out there that were started by people that saw the dollar signs. And that's why they got in business.
Well, here's something. I'm going to read this because nobody knows really who I'm talking about except the people that are very involved in it. Indian Child Welfare Act lawyers involved from Pottawatomie, Nation. Remember the Veronica Brown case? I do not, but I will look it up today. This agency and its history will be repeated again because they just won't give the baby back. They have moved him into a foster home now because the original potentially adoptive family gave him back because they knew his mother wanted him. The agency won't give him to me. They put him in a foster home. Did anyone reach out to you about them? Yes, a lot of people did. Why? Because he made them $40,000, and that is one-seventh of their profit from last year.
Wow.
And this particular agency has a place of business here in Florida, by the way. So here's the deal, people. Is this an important part of our world, adoption agencies? Yes.
Of course.
Is it okay to have, I mean, all the shows we've watched in our lifetimes, I mean, how many things have we watched about black market babies and people taking healthy young women and making them reproduce and reproduce and then sell the babies? And, I mean, there's been horrific things done out there in the world, horrific things. And, of course, always it's led, founded, and invented for the almighty dollar, not for the good of anybody. We wonder why sixth graders fight with each other, and this is going on in our grown-up world. We wonder why families, husbands and wives, beat the hell out of each other and actually kill each other. We wonder why women drown their babies in a bathtub or give birth to six babies and wrap them in a paper bag and hide them in their garage. Why? Because we as leaders are getting away with murder on a daily basis. You know, it's like trying to fix a problem and walking through all the manure to get to the problem that we want to address instead of cleaning up all the manure first so we can walk through. Do you see the symbolism there? I every time we have shows like this, I feel overwhelmed. Shelley and I are trying to do something here that's little, tiny, minute in this big world. But it's still about the rights of others, the welfare of others, the ability to live. I'm looking out my window right now. The grass is green, the sun is shining on the petals of a bush that's out in my front yard, and I'm thinking to myself, we have all this, and then we have all that, and it just doesn't coincide, does it, Shell? It just doesn't coincide.
No.
There are so many other things that we can't fix that we have to deal with, like my husband's cancer. We have to deal with that. So why do we continually go around and make other messes that don't have to be made?
But, see, the whole thing is that I think that what you and I are doing with this show is not little. I think it's huge and all-encompassing because what we talk about here, although our audience and our listenership is still fairly small for right now, okay, but, you know, there's also a trickle effect. There's people that watch the show that then may talk to other people that aren't watching the show. So hopefully we're reaching more people than we're aware of. But the bottom line is what we talk about on this show should be, it is all pervasive because the concepts we talk about affect so many different areas beyond what we specifically talk about because they're general. We talk about general ethics, morality, just simple kindness, bullying. I mean, these things, integrity, these things affect our dealings on every level. Not just in business, not just in personal relationships, even with ourselves. So when you think about it, it's really encompassing just about everything that's wrong with the world can be boiled down to only a few simple concepts. And if people could start operating with more integrity, with more kindness, just those two things right there, think about it. Just those two qualities.
I think about it all the time, honey. I think about it all the time.
A lot of what's wrong with this world. If people would be kinder and operate with higher levels of integrity, Those two emotions, those two qualities would fix so much of what's wrong with the entire world.
I agree. And I also agree with the fact that people get into a bad place and they struggle to survive. And a lot of times that struggle for survival is what puts them in such a bad place that they make so many poor decisions. So I get that. I get it. Believe me, I have been in survival mode in 65 years more times than I can even remember some of them.
Mm-hmm.
Survival mode kicks in because we all want to survive. So I don't want people to not go into survival mode. But I don't want, you know, like Lord of the Flies. I talk about Lord of the Flies to the grandchildren and to my own kids all the time. Lord of the Flies taught me so much about why we need government and why we need people in charge. Because if you're not, then everybody goes into survival mode and wants to be the king of the hill. And if there's no right or wrong, because there's nobody telling you what's right or what's wrong, then all kinds of horrible things happen. Because all I'm thinking about is how Renee's going to survive. I don't give a shit whether you survive or not, Shelley, because I'm in survival mode. So I'm who's important right now. You see, I'm the one that needs to be recognized and be dealt with.
Fight.
And it's all about, you know, it's all about me.
I don't know that we necessarily need government, but you need leaders. And the reason why I say that is there's pockets of civilization all over the world, and I'm talking about one of them in my book, that really don't have any government over them, but they do have a hierarchy in the society where they have elders that are leaders, and it's a very peaceable civilization. And they live very well that way because they're not overladen with laws and things like that. They live basically on a morality system. In fact, it's one of the cultures that Izzy talks about. It's in that book, Ancient Futures. It's fascinating. This is a modern day culture, and so it's not necessarily that we need government, but you definitely need leaders. You need people that will take that on and show the upcoming generations the right way to do things. So you need leaders, but not necessarily governments.
Mm-hmm.
I think sometimes governments crowd the water.
You know, that's how government started, though, Shell. That's how government started, because we had some people who were strong and put themselves into the leadership roles. And then in order to organize those leaders, that's how government was formed. So it's almost like, you know, it's almost like you can't avoid it. Because if you and I and six other people we knew decided they were going to take over the world, we'd have to organize, and that would form a government. So it is about leaders. You're right. You're 1,000% right. It's about the leaders, the people who care enough to lead, not lead us to slaughter, so that they are richer, happier, have more material things. It shouldn't be about that. But sadly, that's where it gets, because the more you have, the more you want. So we've made it into a vicious cycle of that. But in regard to adoption agencies were set up for the welfare of a child who has not seen the light of day yet, who has not had the opportunity to be away from the womb of his mother. So you get him out there in the world. The idea is to still keep him safe and happy. And the people that are going to make those decisions, it can't be about $10. It's got to be about the safety and the welfare of that child. So if you have a mom who's distressed, when we talk about mental anguish and mental health and everything, if a mom is being pinched when she's pregnant, she's in the worst place possible because her hormones are raging. She's upset. She doesn't know what to do with all the emotions she's going through. The people that talk to her need to care about her and her baby.
Right. And time she's being coerced to give the baby up against her desires. So now,
Now
you have someone who's doubly traumatized.
Yes, and that realization has to be first and foremost in the minds of the people that are signing the checks over there, not how big the check is. We're out of time. I am going to personally contact this young woman today and get more information. And I'm also going to talk to some other people that are, you know, in an arena that can maybe do something to help here. I don't know, but I'm going to try. But the point is that this has to be fixed. And since this show, I've found out that there's a lot of people out there struggling with this same thing. So go out and have a great day, everybody. Shell, we're not going to be on the air tomorrow or Wednesday and possibly Thursday. My life is in too big of an upheaval. But I will keep everybody posted as to what's going to happen. Of course, you all called, but it'll be on Facebook, everybody. So go out there and have a great day. God bless. And we'll be back hopefully Thursday morning. Bye-bye. Bye,
Wonderful. Shell. Have a great day, Reen.